And thank you for that Christ-exalting ministry in music. And speaking of music and music ministry, I have a question. The question is this. It's quite a profound question. Brother Robertson, I'm wondering if you were informed about this bonfire beside your unit. All right. I'm grateful to President Beale and each member of the administrative staff, also to the kitchen and housekeeping staff, for these hours and days with you. It's a privilege to be here to preach God's word and to interact. Jane and I are deeply grateful for your kind and warm reception. I would request that if you could take a moment, come by the table up here and pick up this little, it looks like a business card. We've got this new video program up on Facebook called the Front Porch Parson. Front Porch Parson. There seems to be some interest in it, and we give God all the glory for it. I start with a poem. We chat a little bit, and then I give a devotional from a Bible passage, and then we finish by praying for missions. We have a globe there. It changes colors, and we finish praying for missions. I don't give the specific names of the missionaries because sometimes I pray for missionaries who are in troubled areas, and I don't want to give their names. But pick up one of these cards, please, and pray for the ministry of the Front Porch Parson. There's nothing good about me. Anything that's just David is bad. Anything that's just David is sin. Anything good that is ever done through my life is God. So I need your prayers that I'll walk softly before the Lord, mind my own business, and be clean before the Lord. We've got some books on the table. The poetry book is there, about 60 poems. Some of them have been turned into songs. It is $8. Then we've got a special on the Trinity of Evil book. It defines the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. It defines each member of the Trinity of Evil, and then there are very practical steps given to resist those three major temptations. Every temptation we will ever face falls under one or more of those three categories. So if you learn those three categories, you will be armed for every temptation you will ever face. The type is a bit thick because it was scanned and reprinted, so we're making them $5. And then the Jacob and Joseph book is $10. Moments like this, and this is my parting word to all of you here. Moments like this should last forever, and someday they will. We'll walk through the valley, cross over the hill. We'll bask in the sunlight of an eternal sun. We'll breathe in an air where day's never done. We'll sing for an aeon, we'll talk for a year, and we won't say goodbye or shed parting tear. So stay while you can, for I've not had my fill. Moments like this should last forever, and someday they will. Now let's turn, please, to the book of Genesis. Turn to Genesis chapter 37. The reading will be somewhat lengthy. If your health permits, would you stand with me as we're coming to Genesis 37? Genesis 37:3. Now Israel, that refers to Jacob. Now Jacob loved Joseph more than all his children because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. And when his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. And Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said unto them, hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright. And behold, your sheaves stood round about and made obeisance or bowed to my sheaf. And his brethren said to him, shalt thou indeed reign over us? Or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us? And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. And he dreamed yet another dream and told it his brethren and said, behold, I have dreamed a dream more. And behold, the sun and the moon and the 11 stars made obeisance to me. And he told it to his father and to his brethren. And his father rebuked him and said unto him, what is this dream that thou hast dreamed? Shall I and thy mother and thy brethren indeed come to bow down ourselves to thee, to the earth? And his brethren envied him, but his father observed his saying. And his brethren went to feed their father's flock in Shechem. And Israel, Jacob, said unto Joseph, do not thy brethren feed the flock in Shechem. Come, and I will send thee unto them. And he said to him, here am I. Now come down, please, to verse 18. And when they, Joseph's brothers, saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. And they said one to another, behold, this dreamer cometh. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit. And we will say, some evil beast hath devoured him, and we shall see what will become of his dreams. Our text is Genesis 37, verse 20, section E. We shall see what will become of his dreams. Please be seated. We will not turn to it, but please allow me to quote two additional verses. Psalm 105, verses 17 and 18. Psalm 105, 17 and 18. He, God, sent a man before the Israelites, even Joseph, who was sold for a servant or a slave, whose feet they hurt with fetters. He was laid in iron. It's in the Psalms that we learn about the iron chains that were on Joseph's feet. The chains were a long way from the coat of many colors. The chains were not what Joseph had in mind. It was cold. Joseph pulled the stinking camel blanket closer around him and rolled over on his side, only to feel the sharp stab of a pebble against his ribs. Then he remembered and began to sob again. His whole body ached. They had manhandled him when they pulled him out of the cistern. And the long ride after the sale had aggravated the bruises and the strain on his muscles. Ah, yes, the sale. His own brothers had actually sold him to these hard and foul-mouthed Ishmaelites. He had known that his brothers were jealous of him, but he had not realized how much they had come to hate him. He wiped the salty tear from his cheek and blinked. The first rays of dawn were beginning to spread themselves across the seemingly endless desert. How could he have been so stupid? It was all his fault. He had insisted on rubbing their noses in his dreams. And not even Big Reuben had been able to save him from the consequences of his dreams. Stupid dreams. Foolish dreams. Absolutely meaningless. Empty ego trips they were. And the coat was gone. In its place, this matted and manure-laced excuse for a pallet. They had torn the coat when they yanked it off his back. It wasn't so much the beauty of the coat he would miss, though it had been a magnificent coat. It was rather his father whom he would miss the most. His father. How arrogant he'd been to tell his father that he'd someday bow down to him like the 11 stars and the sun and the moon had bowed to him in his dreams. Stupid dreams. Dumb dreams. He'd been a glory hound. And now look what got him. All his shattered, grandiose dreams lay beside him, broken on the ground. Have you ever been there? Most of us who've lived any length of time have. Most of us at some time in our life have been there sobbing, heaving, lying on the cold, heartless ground in the field of broken dreams. The field of broken dreams. Before I proceed any further, I need to give some qualifiers or caveats as to what I'm not saying in this message. For the dreams I'm referring to are not the dreams of the prosperity preachers. The dreams I'm referring to are not the dreams of the self-help preachers who just want to help you, quote-unquote, prosper and be a success. So I need to qualify this. In our age, when secular humanism prevails and eggs all of us on to little gods status, and when self-esteem, motivational speakers masquerading as preachers suggest that our goal in life should be to be a better you or to be a better us, as proper grammar may or may not demand. In our day, when prosperity and achievement are held up as the altars at which we should bow, in this climate of pseudo-dreams, self-oriented dreams, prosperity-oriented dreams, we would do well to consider something Edith Draper, a former editor of Tyndale Publishing, said. Edith Draper wrote, "Highs and lows are more common for people who dream of greater achievements for themselves than what God has assigned to them." Ouch. I need to hear that again. Highs and lows are more common for people who dream of greater achievements for themselves than what God has assigned to them. Because of this, they forfeit the blessings God does have for them. In pursuing their own dream, they miss God's dream for them. The scriptures warn of the kind of thinking that reasons, "I can accomplish anything. Anything I can conceive, I can do. I have it within me. I have the native power and ability to rise in the company and prosper. I can do anything I decide to do. Edith Draper says, this type of thinking is born of pride. And she continues, when people attempt to build their own dream nests, God often uses failure to teach them that it does not work to try to fly with their own wings. And she finally says, at all times, this is the way to pray. Lord, if this dream, if this desire I have honors you, then let it be done in your name and for your glory. If my dream is right for me, then grant that I would use it for your glory. But if this dream that I have harms me, is not for your glory, and doesn't help me spiritually, then take this dream away. Her conclusion is, God's plan exceeds our dream. Would you say that with me, please? God's plan exceeds our dream. Say it one more time. God's plan exceeds our dream. In his immortal poem, If, Rudyard Kipling said, if you can think and not make thoughts your aim, if you can dream and not make dreams your master, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two impostors just the same, if all men count with you, but none too much, if you can fill the unforgiving minute with 60 seconds worth of distance run, yours is the earth and everything that's in it and which is more. You'll be a man, my son. If you can dream and not make dreams your master. If, I say, if Joseph started out making dreams his master, he did not end up that way 93 years later. If he started out making dreams his master, he did not end up that way 93 years later. Joseph allowed the field of broken dreams to make him. Indeed, it was in the field of broken dreams that his dreams came true. Let's come now to Genesis chapter 39 and consider some practical truths that can help us when we find ourselves in the field of broken dreams. Truth number one, let's come to Genesis 39:1. Truth number one in Genesis 39:1. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. Joseph was sold away from the promised land. Joseph was sold into Egypt. Egypt, by no stretch, was the promised land. Egypt was foreign, even hostile turf. So here's the first truth. When you find yourself in the field of broken dreams, remember that God is not bound, restricted, or limited in what he can do with us, even in the field of broken dreams. There is no land or field or place beyond the reach or the power of God. King David asked, whither shall I go from thy spirit? Or whither shall I flee from thy presence? Psalm 139:7. When you're in the field of broken dreams, God is not limited in what he can do for his glory. Right there in Egypt, the field of broken dreams. Would you turn, please, with me to Romans 8? Romans chapter 8. Romans 8:35. The Apostle Paul asked the question, who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation or distress or persecution or famine or nakedness or peril or sword? As it is written, for thy sake we are killed all the day long. We are counted as sheep for the slaughter. Nay, in all these things we are more than conquerors through him that loved us. For I am persuaded that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature or Egypt shall be able to separate us from the love of God which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. There is no field, not even the field of broken dreams, that can restrict or limit God or separate us from his dream for our life in ministry. Now let's move on to truth number two. Truth number two. Come back to Genesis 39. Genesis 39 and come over to verses 19 and 20. In the interest of time, I have to just pass over parts of the narrative. And it came to pass when his master heard the words of his wife, who had brought the false accusation that Joseph had tried to violate her. After this manner, said his wife, did thy servant to me. It came to pass that Potiphar's wrath was kindled, and Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in the prisoner. In the prison, one could say that that was even a lower rung of the ladder than the field of broken dreams. Truth number two. In the field of broken dreams, God's smile is stronger than the wrath of men. In the field of broken dreams, God's smile is stronger than the wrath of men. What would I do without the ladies in my life, my wife, our daughter, our granddaughters? What would I do? What would any of us men do without God-fearing women in our life? But when you get an angry woman, watch out. There is no fury like the fury of an angry, upset, or spurned woman. But God can use the wrath not only of men, but of women, as it is directed at you, to bring praise to himself and to further his good dream for your life. The poet said, stone walls do not a prison make, nor iron bars a cage. She cannot box you in if you're in God's will. He cannot box you in if you're in God's dream for your life. John Bunyan wrote The Pilgrim's Progress in prison. Many of the Apostle Paul's inspired letters were written in prison. In Jeremiah 29, verse 11, God says, I know the thoughts I think towards you, saith the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you an expected end, or perhaps in an expanded sense, to give you a future. Richard Wilton said, heaven's favorite, down a darksome pit they cast, his rich-hued robe and lofty dreams deriding. Then from his tears, their ruthless faces hiding, sell him to merchants who with spicery passed the changeful years o'er that fair slave, fled fast. Behold him now, in glorious chariot riding, arrayed in shining vesture, and presiding o'er Egypt's councils, owned by heaven at last. In pit or palace, God's own hand was weaving the many-colored texture of his days, the brightest tints, till last, in wisdom leaving, so. When in dismal paths our feet are sinking, let us be looking soon for lightsome rays, for our wise Father thoughts of peace is thinking. When we find ourselves in the field of broken dreams and confronted by the wrath of Mrs. Potiphar, we need not fear what mankind can do unto us. Psalm 56, 4 through 6. As long as the Lord is looking upon us with what Albert E. Brumley called his kind, smiling face. As long as the Lord is looking upon us with his dream for our life, no man or woman can finally destroy us. They may try, and they may seem to succeed for a while, but they cannot finally succeed as long as God is smiling upon us with his dream for our life. Martin Luther said, the body they may kill, God's truth abideth still. Let's come now to the third truth that we may know and cling to when we find ourselves in the field of broken dreams. Genesis 39:20d, and Joseph was there in the prison. The last section of that verse, 20. Joseph was there in the prison, not much room to move in a prison cell, not much access to your loved ones, especially when your loved ones are way back up in Canaan. Truth number three, the field of broken dreams strips away our natural dependencies so that we come to depend only on the Lord. Joseph didn't have anyone else he could depend on in the prison. The field of broken dreams strips away our natural dependencies so that we come to depend only on the Lord. I will tell you with sadness and with shame, this lesson is one of the hardest I've ever learned. Soon as I get out of prison, it doesn't take long and I'm back to the old way of depending on other things and people. Jeremiah 17, verse 5 says, cursed be the man or woman that trusteth in man and maketh flesh his arm or his dependency. I remember when I went away to Bible college, I'd been raised on a farm, small church, small high school. Didn't know much about city living. Some twins had come up to Canada to go to the small Bible college, identical twins. And the dorm to which I was assigned had been carved out of an old root cellar under the dining hall. It used to be the root cellar where they kept potatoes and beets and things like that. But this college was growing, and so they turned the root cellar into a men's dorm. And I had suitcases, big suitcases, in both hands. And I stepped into the outer door, and then they told me that the room was to the left. And I was preoccupied with the suitcases, and I didn't see that there was a lip up into the room. And of course I tripped, caught my toe, and the first welcoming, loving, joyful words I heard from my new dorm mates was, "Ah, you dumb Pollock, pick up your feet." And then I saw the source of the voice, and I thought, "Oh my soul." And I looked across the room, and there was a second identical one of him. You're talking about being lonely. I felt for those first few days, Lord, I don't like this Bible college stuff. I didn't much care for bringing in the hay, but I think I'd rather be with the cows than have this Michigander calling me a dumb Polack. When you go away, it will wean you from your dependencies pretty quick. And if ever a man was away, Joseph was away when he was in prison. A loving God took from Joseph father, mother, homeland, Reuben, and cockiness. A loving God took that dependency on cockiness. Hey guys, good morning. Have a good day. Just want to remind you, you're going to bow. Have a great day. Love you. God weaned Joseph of his cockiness. You say, well, you're reading into it. Well, even his father who loved him said, now, Joe, come on. Are you sure about all this? It was all true, but that doesn't mean that the way in which Joe told his brothers was the most discreet and the most wise. God stripped Joseph of his dependency on his self-sufficiency and that he was going to rise on the block of his family connection. And the chief butler or cupbearer later forgot. Everybody left him high and dry, stripped of his dependencies. God did the same thing with Daniel and his three Hebrew friends. God let them be torn from everything familiar in the Babylonian captivity. Do you remember John 12:24? Jesus said, except the corn, a grain of wheat, fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. Remember that? Would you like to know what missionary Amy Carmichael says about except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone? Amy Carmichael said, if I am not willing to be a corn of wheat that falls into the ground, which means, according to her expression, to be separated from everything I've known and been familiar with. If I'm not willing to fall into the ground and die, be separated from everything I've been familiar with, then I know nothing of Calvary love. That's what it means to die. To go into an environment where everything is unfamiliar. To cut away from those dependencies and familiarities. She said, that's what it means to have Calvary love. It was after Charles Weigel's wife walked out on him and said, I will not continue to be the wife of a preacher and a song evangelist. I'm out of here. She said, I'm going to have some fun. And she went to California. She went to party. And Dr. Weigel was down in Florida. He had considered suicide. He went to the end of the dock and was thinking about jumping in. Of course, Jesus drew near. At some point, he went to his little piano. And he began to talk and sing. And he wrote, I would love to tell you what I think of Jesus since I found in him a friend so kind and true. I would tell you how he changed my life completely. He did something that even my wife, though I know that's not the lyric, but I'll make it the lyric. He did something that no other friend could do. No one ever cared for me like Jesus. There's no other friend so kind as he. No one else could take the sin and the darkness from me. Oh, how much he cared for me. Charles Weigel was removed from the presence of his wife. And when she was dying, she told her daughter, Go tell your daddy I made a fool of my life. I destroyed my life. Preacher, songwriter Ira Stanfield also had his wife leave him for the nightclubs. She was a singer. And she was killed, at least she received deadly injuries in a train wreck on the way to the nightclubs. And Ira rushed to get there. They'd long been separated, but Ira rushed to get to her, but she was dead before he ever got there. It was Ira Stanfield who wrote the comforting song. We'll talk it over in the by and by. Though shadows deepen and my heart bleeds, I will not question the way he leads. This side of heaven, we know in part. I will not question a broken heart. We'll talk it over in the by and by. We'll talk it over, my Lord and I. I'll ask the reasons. He'll tell me why. When they talk it over in the by and by, they were stripped of their natural dependencies, even as Joseph was. Well, I'm going to wrap it up here. I'll make this one truth number four. Turn to Genesis 41:50. I can be quick about this. Genesis 41:50. And unto Joseph were born two sons before the years of the famine came, which Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, the pagan priest of On, bare unto him. And Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh. For God said, he hath made me forget all my toil, and more than toil. God hath made me forget my toil, and I suppose the sale, and I suppose the harsh words of his brothers. He's made me forget all my father's house. And the name of the second called he Ephraim. For God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. First son, I'm going to name you Manasseh to remind me that God helps me to forget. And I'm going to name you Ephraim, for God has made me fruitful in the field of broken dreams. Far more often than not, our days of greatest deepening and our greatest spiritual fruitfulness are in the very land of affliction. They come in the field of broken dreams, not apart from it. Recall that classic statement, the blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church. When you shed blood, that's the field of broken dreams. John and Betty Stamm wanted to live. They were 28. They hid their little baby under the bed. And the believers found her after they had their heads taken from their bodies. They wanted to live, just like you and I want to live. But God worked in China. When John and Betty Stamm faced the field, actually it was a barren, cold, windy hillside where they were beheaded. But they became fruitful in the field of broken dreams. It's always been that way for the church. Hannah conceived the mighty judge, revivalist, and kingmaker Samuel when she was most provoked by her jealous adversary. You know, it was polygamy. And Peninnah kept saying, you can't have any children, I can. She conceived Samuel when she had been most provoked by her human adversary. the Hebrew slaves in Egypt multiplied in a setting of infanticide. They multiplied in the field of broken dreams. Sometime after the communists overran China, members of the Chinese underground church were asked, "Did you survive the communist purge?" They answered, "We not only survived, we grew. The house churches multiplied." Well, even with the purest motives, sooner or later, we find ourselves in the field of broken dreams. You may have had some dreams broken in your time here in college. Be sure to let God make the dreams for you. And if you find yourself in the field of broken dreams, understand what God can do in that field. If you stop fighting Him, He cannot bless it as long as you fight it. Brother, would you come?